It is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us, of course, on a Friday morning. You can find him not only here at Robin Hood Radio on the air live on Fridays, but also rebroadcast over the weekend at our 12 noon block. Also, David has his own website, themediabeat.us. And David also is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And as when I was a little kid, I always used to read Spy versus Spy. And I guess, David, Cloak and Dagger starts you off today, right?
It's been a Cloak and Dagger week in the media. Yeah, good to be with you again, reporting for you once more back in my usual setting of the media capital of the world, New York City. New York City is also the site of negotiations, and they're being conducted by, interestingly, Cloak and Daggerish sort of figures. Former chief of spying for North Korea is in town. Kim Jong.
Good luck with that.
Oh, Kim Jong Jol.
That's right. Knew that was going to happen.
None of these Asian names are easy for me, I'm afraid. I spent much of my working life dealing with them, and now that I think I'm in semi-retirement, the names just keep jumping up to catch me. No, he's here, former head of security for the Kims, for the various Kims who have been in charge of North Korea, and he's here to talk to Mike Pompeo. Mike Pompeo. It's not as if European names are that much easier for me. But he's the Secretary of State, but of course he passed through the office of CIA chief to get there. So interesting bit of diplomacy conducted by spies. Quite apart from that, in Ukraine, as it sometimes is said to prefer to be called, without the article before it, in Ukraine, yes, Arkady Babchenko shot to death, reportedly. And then the next day, a press conference in which he is shown not to have been shot to death, allegedly by Russian spies or agents for the Russians. But instead, it was a fake death, a sting operation, they claimed.
But stop right there.
You know what I loved about this?
Can we go any further into the realms of spy fiction?
But wait.
What I loved about this, though, is on the list of apologies after it was revealed he was alive, his wife was like third or fourth on the list.
His biggest. Sorry, honey. No,
still rather uncertain whether his wife knew it was a fake.
It is not clear.
It sounds like she did not. It sounds like she was fooled.
Along
with many other people. Yeah.
And this
in fact, every news agency in the world, too. Straight-facedly. and why wouldn't they? It was the cover story was very convincing and fits, as often with... I'm afraid I'm slipping into the phrase now, fake news. It works because it fits a picture, a preconceived picture, a prejudice usually. But in this case, it certainly fits a picture of activity by the Russians in that region, Crimea, eastern Ukraine, and of course many other places too. We know that from other stories.
But also in fairness...
So yeah, it's perfectly believable that someone acting on behalf of the Russians would have shot him.
In fairness... And I just really have to interrupt you because this is tricky, and we're now expecting, not we, but the expectation is that people who essentially do not deal in nuance any day of the week, any ever, are now going to be able to absorb the nuance of what happened in this situation. And there is undoubtedly more to come. And what I find striking is because... There is something called plausibility. All right, what happened was plausible.
What was said to have happened was plausible. You mean what was initially reported was believed because it was plausible.
More to the point, creating a I can't say the first time, but this is typically done in the world. Deception is very much part of the...
Oh, deception is plausible, sure. I mean, the use of deception, and certainly in the perpetual sniping back and forth between Russia and Ukraine, this is par for the course. Staging a murder is perhaps one notch
up. But staging the murder of a journalist, this is where it becomes interesting, quote, quote, for lack of a, you know, that's a stupid word, but because you, I'm sure that different murders of different people have been staged along the way, and some have and some haven't. We never hear about it. But the way that this was put out is what makes it, you know, particularly cure is the disease is the cure, or however that goes. Because it was immediately reported by wire service, right? And then
swinging around the world and several times over before the next episode, which of course turned the story entirely on its head. Yes.
But you can't say in this instance that that wasn't going to happen. I mean, that is not an unreasonable response if something like this happens.
You know, there was a willing audience for it, and we were all taken in. That's true.
But it was planned. I mean,
and of course, there's been a lot of hand-wringing afterwards saying that this is a terrible new development for journalism. And so, and if you're in the battle against fake news, one of the last things you should be doing is faking your own news, even if it was for the greater good, as they're trying to claim. Of course, the Ukrainian authorities, that it was a sting operation to reveal what was planned as a plot to actually kill Arkady Babchenko. And you can see, of course, that it is. It's a disturbing development. But also, there's a strong argument for saying if you're concerned about the safety of your journalists, if you're concerned about the safety of your population, and you discover there is a plot to kill this prominent individual, and one way of dealing with it is turning the assassin, which seems to have been what happened, and make the Russians believe that they had accomplished their alleged task, their mission, and then it gets revealed because of that, then that's an okay tactic, I guess, in that field. But it does make the whole journalistic side of it extremely murky and troublesome. And of course, just contributes to the general disaffection in populations far and wide with journalism. And how credible is it these days anyway? Especially when we have the pinnacles of power proclaiming all the time that the journalists are liars all the time.
Well, let's stop for one second, because in fairness to whom?
There's an awful lot of people with divided interests.
This is what I was just going to say. I will
be fair to. That's the trouble here.
Right, but that's what makes this, to me, particularly cool, because you can jump. It's almost like standing at the net in tennis and just jumping back and forth and jumping back and forth and jumping back and forth. And not everything is that, shall we say, murky or that obvious a line. And what I was about to say is, one of the things that I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but a few years ago through our State Department, we had some young kids come to the radio station from BARD, through BARD and through the State Department, and they were from the Middle East, and not one of the really smart, really, you had to be, you know, amazingly bright and accomplished, let's just say, to get into this program. The point being that they, like their parents who I knew, not literally, but the age of, have a most healthy skepticism, or don't call it healthy, but are skeptical of government in general, period. And that skepticism, I just remember being in Europe when I was younger, and that's younger, you know, this is a broad
As
statement.
We all once were, yes, well, even you, yes.
Even me, well, younger or in Europe. But the point is,
and in Europe. Oh yes. Uh-huh. That's a good setting in which to be
younger,
skeptical. Yeah. Well, it's a good. Yeah, I'm skeptical. Yeah.
Do you remember? I'm certain that you do. that the pronouncements of governments were typically greeted with a healthy dose of skepticism. I mean, that was the starting point.
Uh-huh.
It always seemed that it was significantly less believable. And then you cross over to here where there's some sense that, well, if they say it, if the spokesperson says it, it must be true, which is just baffling. But that's how it does seem as though there's a difference in approach. So
between the journalism of Europe and the journalism of the United States, is that what you're saying?
Fair enough. I mean, uh-huh. in just,
well, there is
broad strokes.
Well, it's not so much that Americans are more credulous, I don't think. It's just that there is a journalistic tradition that it is enough to simply quote authorities in response to, for instance, an accusation or at least a report that sheds poor light on government or on institutions. The journalistic tradition here is a somewhat lazy one that says that all you have to do then is quote the government source or the institutional source in response, and that's it. Europeans, as you say, do have a tradition of greater skepticism, and that requires a lot more decision-making and action-taking by the journalists themselves to actually establish what the truth might be, not just take the denial or the official statement of what the government believes to be true as some form of ending the matter. Some kind of full stop at the end of the sentence. It often is not. You often have to probe that much more deeply with official statements. And that's the one area, I think, where American journalism has been weaker, you know, even though there is a very strong and healthy tradition of investigative journalism in American news, in American journalism, too. But it tends to be kept rather separate from news reporting.
And which brings me back to now, let's go to Ukraine for a sec, because this is where all this took place. So then, as I'm jumping back over, do you, because you know, the Kremlin is notorious for its spokespeople's statement. Let's just, again, I'll be diplomatic. Let's just go back to that healthy dose of skepticism. How do you treat this particular story through the lens of that healthy dose of skepticism? Was it not, I mean, was it utilized in your view?
Well, on the first day, or at least I suppose technically the second day of the story's running, when the news conference happened and Babchenko himself walked into the room to the astonishment of all the journalists and this extraordinary ripple of uncertainty and then applause for the man who they thought was dead, appearing, that from then on, everything had to be treated with not just a dose of skepticism, but just a complete sense of really. No, we have to get to the bottom of this, and we still have not, of course, gotten to the bottom of it. Journalists are trying their best so far, but it's proving indeed very murky. And you know, this whole territory is notoriously difficult to report on anyway. Spies and government agents and covert operatives are never going to tell you the truth. And you keep having to dig and pose one version of the story against another.
Yeah, and that's where it gets a little exhausting. Some people might say they even want their heads might explode.
It's pretty exhausting for the reader too when you have to try if you are trying to follow it in real time. And of course, the news cycle requires us to do that if we want to keep up. The other thing to do, of course, is just wait until the story gets some clarity by distance but of course, that's not what our electronic media are about. It needs to be coming thick and fast, doesn't it?
It would appear that way. So that leaves us where exactly?
Well, it leaves us in that very uncomfortable position for any journalist, but it's one that increasingly I am forced to adopt and get more comfortable with anyway. Just say those simple three words, I don't know. I don't know, and it's almost anathema for many a journalist to have to be put in the position of saying just that. Well, the truth is, we don't know. We simply don't know.
And so that makes me long for the editor again.
Sure, absolutely. And there are other stories to move on to in the meantime.
Don't be feckless. Can I ask you, David?
Or irresponsible.
David, can I ask you a question?
Yes, go ahead.
And I'm amazed at this. I look at the American media with what's going on with the tweets from Roseanne Barr and then Samantha Bee and the amazing coverage it is getting on the news networks here. I just want your take on the way the news media seems to glom on to these things that might be important for a moment, but do they really deserve 8, 10 to 12 minutes lead on every newscast?
Oh, sure, yes. Well, someone mentioned to me last night. Extraordinary to see, even in. Reputable, sober-minded news outlets like the New York Times. Three articles of slightly different standpoints on the Roseanne Barr racism and the various bits of apology making sense or non-apology making in some cases. Three articles about that. And what about the new... newly revealed figures for deaths since Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. Oh, yeah. Only one. There's something disproportionate about this outrage and apology industry which has built up.
It's really,
Samantha Bee's story somehow regarded as some form of balancing against the Roseanne Barr outrage and apology story. It is a little crazy, I have to say.
When did bad taste become the lead in the news? I'm sorry.
No, but it's a good question. And the other thing.
We're there.
But the other thing.
We have bad taste in the Oval Office, so it's a matter of it's a national emergency.
That being said, what's also unhealthy is, I hope, or unhelpful. I'm going to go with unhelpful. What is unhelpful is if you limit your cable samplings to, if yesterday morning I've got a note because it was Russia Mueller on CNN, it was Russia Mueller on MSNBC, and it was the Right to Try on Fox. And
well, that sounds like a reasonable snapshot. I would probably regard that as a pretty standard morning.
It is a pretty standard morning.
In American television these days. Yeah.
It's a pretty standard morning, and that's fine and whatnot. But what I'm saying is that I would say that 95% of the people who watch one don't watch the other two, and vice versa. So
is some overlap between MSNBC and Fox News, but it is very small. You're right.
It's a very small, and I don't know. And it's a very small overlap, I would think, between CNN and Fox. I don't know what the actual
bigger, figures. but not substantial. Still not substantial.
The problem is that, I think if I lined up 10 people, this is totally unscientific. Six of them wouldn't even know what Right to Try is.
That's true.
And I just cannot see that being efficient.
If you're wishing for efficiency from the American
kind of
public's viewing habits, you'll be looking for a long time, I think.
Yeah, but that's the old. You give them. Oh no.
We give them what they want.
You give them what they want, which is what you want to give them, and then say that they like it.
It's many people's lines, unfortunately, many institutions' lines. We give the public what it wants.
Right. That's about the most self-serving, miserable.
No, the comment has changed. You give the portion of the public you program to
what you want to give them.
Exactly what they want.
That's right.
Or what we have found they want.
Yeah,
we're never going to change that. Right.
Right. I know, but that's just the sort of thing that it makes my headache worse. How are we for time?
We have about another 3.5 minutes left. Okay. If we want to peruse some things. I think.
No. Was there any news this week? Sorry. Seriously, it's just stupid.
It looked in New York as if actually, you know, there was no people around me were talking about this last night. There were no motorcades, even though they had this pre-summit going on in New York between North Korea and the State Department's chief officer. The talks were taking place in the residence of the United States representative to the United Nations deputy. So it was clearly it was in the diplomatic part of the city around the United Nations, and that's a part of town I'm in a lot, and the traffic was not particularly affected by it, and it struck me as unusually hugger-mugger, you know. That's why I don't think the cloak and dagger analogy is entirely out of bounds. It was surprisingly quiet.
Where is the mission?
And I would have thought. One option that might have been employed is a lot more ostentation for this kind of talk from this kind of administration. I mean, you might have expected a motorcade at the very least.
Where is the mission?
It's close to the United Nations building. It's sort of halfway between. The mission itself is right across the street from the United Nations. The residences are further back, and traditionally they have also used the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, which is latitude, if you like, in New York, but further in from the East River, where the United Nations is.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens next week. And the story you're right about Puerto Rico is devastating, almost the amount of people.
And of course, we must mark that today is the beginning of this year's hurricane season. And it's shocking that they are in no way prepared for this year, still suffering the appalling havoc of last year's damage by two hurricanes.
Unbelievable. All right. David, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Taracek with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. And as we said, you can hear it rebroadcast on the weekend and in our noon hour as well. And at robinhoodradio.com, click on demand, click on the Media Beat.